With nearly 5,000 specialists dedicated to supporting dealer financial services, Ally has the expertise to help you with your retail finance, F&I, and remarketing needs. We're all better off with an Ally. Contact your local Ally account executive to get started today. Ally, do it right.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive for the fourth week in April 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today, we're breaking down some of the biggest stories in the auto industry from the past week and looking forward to what's in store in the days ahead. Today on the show, our own Lindsay Van Hulley joins us to talk about her profile of General Motors North America Chief Marisa West.
At least once a month, she wants to prioritize going to visit a dealership showroom, being able to go and see, you know, how they operate, that they're all different.
That's coming up in a few minutes. But first, today, we have a special guest.
That's right, Kel. We've got CJ Moore with us. She covers used cars for Automotive News. And we have another one of our big lists coming out next week, the top 100 franchised used car dealership groups. CJ, did I have that right?
Yeah, that sounds right, Jamie.
Okay, good. Gosh, you know, this list keeps getting bigger. At least the numbers keep getting bigger. Used cars have become so important to dealership groups. It seems like they have to grow their used car sales just to keep in the same spot, just to keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as was the case with, you know, our top 150 list and what drove movement on that, similar for top 100 to some degree, acquisitions certainly drove a lot of the sales growth that movers on the list had in 2023. And at the same time, though, top 100 is kind of interesting because those who moved up the list said that sales growth was twofold. The acquisitions helped, but so did keeping a good handle on used car departments last year and not relaxing on that very crucial sales side, even as new vehicle inventory kept coming back. I can give you an example. So Sierra Automotive Inc., which is of, you know, Fenton, so not too far away from me, actually, Fenton, Michigan, had a repeat performance at number 12. So 2 years in a row at number 12. And its total used vehicle sales rose 8.1% to 38,498 in 2023. At the same time, though, its same store sales, so those which didn't come from dealerships it acquired in 2023, also rose 4%. And that group's president, Matt Serra, just spoke with me about how it was important to really keep the dealership's operating model honed. And it uses the group's operating model honed, I should say. The group uses a decentralized model. So its dealer partners are free to run their dealerships differently. So slight variances in what they do. Styles of leadership and sales practices can, you know, like I said, they can vary. But at the same time, they have different styles, but also choose to follow kind of the same a couple of guiding principles, one of which is, of course, kind of a used car fundamental, which is working as best they can to acquire trade-ins, which are, you know, what Matt Serra called an excellent source of inventory.
And CJ, what about CarMax and Carvana?
Yeah, so our readers, our listeners might be wondering, you know, where CarMax and Carvana are at, given their two used car powerhouses. So kind of a backstory here, an explanation for that. A few years ago, CarMax, which is, you know, the largest retailer of used cars in the U.S., decided to divest of its last franchise dealerships to focus on, you know, what is a huge and highly fragmented used car market. And when it did so, it just made sense for us to really consider pinpointing sales from players in the space that are used vehicle only. So used vehicles are the name of their game. We carved out and published a list of them for the first time in May 2023, and we'll be doing that again this year. So, I mean, this is kind of a plug for folks to participate in that list, but by all means, if any listeners do operate a large use-only operation and want to be included, submit your contact information to us to receive a survey, and that can be accessed by visiting autonews.com/usedsubmit, USEDSUBMIT.
All right, CJ, thanks for joining us. Look forward to reading all about the top 100 used vehicle dealership groups. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's a really good data set. We appreciate all the work that you did on it, and we know the readers are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on to talk about it.
All right, Jamie, you ready to get into some news?
Let's do it, Kel.
All right. So what are your thoughts on GM's encouraging earnings report for the first quarter? And was the key for the company not selling EVs?
You know, it probably did. You know, GM, according to the data we get from S&P Global Mobility, you know, they include a few Cruise vehicles and BrightDrop. So they list like five GM brands. Four of them were up, but by pretty small numbers, and Chevy was way down because Bolt sales are way down now that they stopped making them. And, you know, probably losing money on each EV, so selling fewer of them is a little less of a headwind. But they also had a really strong quarter for pickups and SUVs. You know, as we've seen the strategy shifting, the companies are moving a little, pulling back a little on EV plans, leaning more into the profitable trucks. And, you know, these days it seems like investors are actually in favor of profits. You know, they, during the EV bubble, they didn't seem to care. You're like, hey, invest in money losing EVs all you want. We'll drive your stock up the more you promise. And now they're like, yeah, actually, maybe it's a good idea to make money instead of losing money. And while we try to figure out the business case for EVs, maybe more in the later part of the decade.
Gotcha. I mean, you know how it is here in the United States, man. Folks just love their trucks and they're going to keep moving them.
Yes, sir.
So we reported this week that a group of dealer associations are pressing Honda and VW not to sell planned EVs from Scout and Sony Honda Mobility in the U.S. outside of the franchise dealer system. Jamie, in your opinion, and you've done this for a really long time, what are the consequences if Honda and VW ignore this request?
You know, it's funny, you referenced my long history. The thing is, this kind of stuff didn't happen for the first 20-some years that I covered the industry. I mean, Tesla was the only startup really since Honda that didn't fail. And, you know, we just never saw, I mean, you sort of had GM created Saturn, and they sort of did a, you know, separate, they didn't sell them through Chevy dealers necessarily, but they used dealers. This is just a new territory. And I think like a lot of companies, you know, a lot of the startups, they saw Tesla's success. And maybe some of it was because of the retail model. But of course, a lot of it's the software and the batteries and the unique styling and all that. But they all think, well, Tesla didn't use dealers, so maybe the best way to go is not having dealers. And there's some logic to that. Dealerships make a lot of money, and if the automakers could pocket that, that'd be to their benefit. But it's a really different skill set. And as we've seen with some of the startups, you know, that wanted to go direct to consumer and really struggled with it. And, you know, I kind of think Polestar was originally going to be direct to consumer. They now have an asset light dealer model. VinFast and Fisker both tried to go direct to consumer and then found out how hard that was and got dealers. There's a lot of value in having a business partner who will buy your product as soon as it's made and then let them figure out how to sell it. And if they make some money for doing that, well, that's the value they brought to the table. So I think, you know, there's a good case for them not doing it, but these are big decisions for these new brands.
And do you think, Jamie, I mean, you know, Honda and Volkswagen, I mean, they've been selling cars and they've sold a lot of cars for a really, really long time. Do you think essentially that they'll just fall in line?
I don't know. You know, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, I'd say absolutely not. They're dead determined to go alone, go direct to consumer. But there could be, you asked, you know, what would be the consequences? I mean, it's possible, right? These are going to probably use a lot of the same parts, the same designs. You know, there could be warranty work, other repairs that need to be done. And maybe the dealers would refuse to work on, you know, Scout or Afila vehicles because if you're not going to cut us in, we're going to cut you out. Maybe they wouldn't, but that's certainly that type of activity could come back to haunt the brands for that.
Yeah, because I'm kind of thinking, I'm like, I don't think dealers would leave that money on the table, especially service drive money. You know how dealers are when it comes. They make a lot of their money in the service drive. They're not going to leave that money on the table.
That's all you can get. Absolutely. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right. Interesting times.
Coming up, Automotive News staff reporter Lindsay Van Hulley joins us to talk about her profile on GM North America chief Marisa West. That's next on Weekend Drive.
For over 100 years, Ally has helped dealers like you serve your customers by providing the best-in-class products and services you need and by remaining true to the automotive passion we share. Your dedicated Ally account executive will work hand-in-hand with you to help you gain efficiencies, increase your product offerings, and work to improve per-vehicle revenue, because we care about your business as much as you do. We're all better off with an Ally. Contact your local Ally account executive to get started today. Ally, do it right.
Welcome back to Weekend Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Marisa West is now in charge of General Motors' largest and most profitable region. In January, she was promoted to president of GM North America. She succeeded Rory Harvey, who moved into a new position as president of global markets. Our own Lindsay Van Hulley recently sat down with West for an exclusive interview. She joins me now to talk about that conversation and West's career leading up to this point. Lindsay Van Hulley, welcome to Weekend Drive.
Thanks for having me.
So you have a big piece on autonews.com and in next week's printed issue about Marisa West, GM's new president for North America. That's a big job. What's she getting into?
Yeah, well, you know, she, as of January, was promoted into the role. She'd previously been leading GM Canada for a couple of years, but Rory Harvey, who had been in the role previously, was moved into a new position, kind of leading global markets. And so Marisa, in January, was promoted to the North America operations and kind of expanding the oversight that she had in Canada much more broadly now across the continent.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big jump, actually. I mean, Canada is, what, 20% of the market that the U.S. is. So this is a much bigger responsibility. And she's pretty young for an executive at that high of a level.
She's 42.
42. So she came to Detroit for this job from Canada, but she's actually from Michigan. It's not like she's a Canadian.
Yeah, she grew up in Michigan, fourth generation GM employee.
Fourth generation?
Her dad, some grandparents, and a great-grandfather all worked for GM before she did. So it's very much been part of her story. She recalls, you know, growing up with the company and the industry really front of mind.
You know, I was always very interested in the product, always very interested in the company. You know, I grew up in a household where you only parked GM products in the driveway and everything else needed to be out at the road.
And so the fact that she kind of went to GM, she said, is really not, you know, surprising to her that was something that she'd always kind of envisioned.
Yeah, kind of a foregone conclusion. It's a family business, not in the sense of one that is owned by the family, but one when all the family works there. And we see this in Southeast Michigan, whole families that work for Ford or for GM or for Chrysler. But that's pretty fascinating. You see some third generations. You don't see a lot of fourth generation folks. So that's kind of unique.
Yeah, she talks about that sense of that family pride. You know, there's a line of relatives, you know, before her that have all been part of this company, and now she's able to be as well.
So she probably wouldn't have gone to Ford or one of the foreign automakers unless it was a really desperate case. But seriously, growing up in the industry and in Michigan, she used to go to the auto show as a kid and all that.
Yeah, it's a story she's told since taking this new position. But, you know, as a child, she would attend the Detroit Auto Show and she'd sort of walk around the various automaker stands and collect the vehicle brochures that were available featuring all the different vehicles. And then she'd go home and pretend that she was working at a car dealership. So she would pretend that the vehicles and the brochures were sort of the properties that she had to sell.
Yeah, those were the cars. So that's kind of fun. So but she didn't become a car dealer. That seems like, you know, you play car dealer. I used to play Anchorman when I was a kid. But of course, I went into print journalism, at least, you know, to get my career going. I think she had said she was interested in marketing, but studied engineering. That's a much tougher road.
Yeah, you know, she was talking about how she had, you know, the interest, you know, the propensity for math and science. You know, she kind of shared a story about, you know, her dad worked for GM and had a marketing degree, but worked in an engineering function.
He said, you know, I really encourage you to get the engineering degree. You can do it. You have the aptitude. So I got a lot of encouragement early on to go towards engineering.
She did go on and studied engineering at Michigan State University, graduated with a degree in mechanical engineering, you know, ultimately then hired in with GM doing some engineering out at the Milford Proving Ground, and eventually would even go on and get a master's in mechanical engineering as well.
Hmm. Yeah. And so out at Milford, she worked on, what do they call it, noise and vibration. I think some automakers call it NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. But trying to make the cars, you know, feel good and sound good.
Yeah, that was you know, kind of part of her, you know, career trajectory. She's worked in noise and vibration. She has been a few kind of vehicle chief engineers as well. She worked on full-size pickups. She was executive chief engineer at mid-size pickups and medium-duty trucks. You know, so talked a lot about really that product background, you know, the engineering and the product side really being a big part of her career, you know, really up until that international assignment in Canada.
It's just such an important part of the industry. That is what it is, the auto industry, because you're making and selling autos.
Yeah. You know, she said it was interesting when we were talking about that. I was asking her about, you know, when she was in Canada, some of the things that she learned in that business that kind of translates now into North America. And she said, you know, she loves being on the side of the business, you know, with kind of that eye on sales and operations, and said, you know, I love the product side as well, but, you know, this is where it all comes together. You know, everything starts in this business when you build and sell a new car. And that product development background now with kind of the sales eye that comes with that role, you know, it's sort of looking at how do we take these products that we build and engineer and now figure out the best way to get them and present them to customers.
Well, even the role in Canada really starts to bring everything together, right? Maybe not as much the product development, but you're over manufacturing as well as sales, and you've got a lot of moving pieces that all need to fit together. And of course, yeah, running North America for General Motors, I mean, this is not the old GM that was, you know, determined to be the world's biggest automaker with big money losing operations in Europe and all around the world. It's become much more North American focused. And of course, that's where the money gets made. What did she do first when she came to the North American job?
You know, one of the things, actually, I reached out to one of the dealer council chairs for the brands, and he said within 24 hours of hearing the news about her promotion that she was on the phone, you know, calling dealers, wanting to introduce herself, wanting to kind of get to know them a little bit, and just kind of making that initial outreach. And, you know, that idea of kind of familiarizing herself with U.S. dealers now, not just the Canadian dealers, was something that she really talked about as a priority of hers, you know, that it's a relationship business. It's, you know, something that, you know, she wants to get to know as many of them as possible and show that, you know, she appreciates and kind of understands, you know, the importance of their role in the process too, and really begin to build that dialogue.
Yeah, it's not a unique position to say that, especially within General Motors, to say that dealers are an asset and are valued. But for them to really see the actions, to have her reach out on day one, really shows through actions, not words, you know, that they are important partners for her.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in talking with dealer council chair, you know, he talked about seeing that as a really encouraging sign, you know, somebody who's interested in what dealers have to say, who's, you know, actively listening and taking notes and then following up, you know, taking the feedback and kind of reporting back to them, and that kind of two-way dialogue being an important part of that process, and really, you know, demonstrating that relationship is two-way, that it is important for GM to hear from dealers to hear from GM, and really, you know, as the dealer put it, you know, working on shared goals.
Mm-hmm. You have a nice quote from her in your story where she says, this is a relationship business.
Whether we're talking about our internal relationships and how we get things done within General Motors, and whether we're talking about our dealerships and their relationships with our end customers.
I mean, I think you think about the way this industry works, and yeah, you've got all these different parts of GM that, or and all any automaker, but we're talking about GM, all these different parts of GM that have to be able to work together. But they've got, you know, thousands of relationships with suppliers, with dealers, from dealers to customers, sometimes from the brand to customers through marketing and other efforts. But, you know, it is entirely made up of people who get things done. And it's so important to feel respected and heard and like you're part of the solution.
You know, one of the things Marisa told me was that, you know, at least once a month, she wants to prioritize going to visit a dealership showroom, being able to go and not just talk to them, but actually go and see, you know, how they operate, that they're all, you know, they're all different, you know, slightly different in how they, you know, approach that role. The customer first culture really, I think, kind of intertwines among all of them, but all of the dealers have a slightly different, you know, process and how they go about doing that. And, you know, she talks a lot about, you know, kind of modernizing that system. You know, we know that GM is working on a digital retail platform that they're rolling out now. And so kind of talking to dealers about how to make that process seamless, you know, wherever a customer is, and, you know, really wants to be able to get into dealerships, just get to know them and see how they operate and get a sense of how that relationship works. You know, she called it kind of keeping the lines of communication open.
Well, if I know anything about dealers, they will communicate with her what their pain points are, and she will have plenty to follow up with them on, as we will with you as her career evolves and the GM story continues. Lindsay Van Holy covers General Motors for us here at Automotive News. She joins us on location from Las Vegas, where she's reporting. Lindsay, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for this Weekend Drive edition of Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News executive producer Jake Neer for his help on today's podcast. You can get the latest news on automotive executives, earnings results, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back on Monday for a conversation with Amazon's Wendy Bauer about the retail giant's partnership with Hyundai and how Amazon Web Services is helping the automaker operate more efficiently.
It's really around speeding their feature function development, driving that cost down, and getting that innovation to market more quickly.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. If you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.